cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. McCowan and Primetime Sports. Now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is Thursday, July the 10th, 2014. Hour number 3 of Primetime Sports. It's Canada's most listened to sports talk presentation. Coast to coast on the Sportsnet radio and television networks. I'm Bob McCowan. That's Arash Madani over there. James Sharman will join Arash later in the program to talk about soccer. I will be either leaving early or napping or just ignoring the conversation entirely. I have nothing to add to it.
Good to know.
Well, you got to have a Brit on the staff these days, you know, if you're going to talk soccer.
Right.
So we're going to bring Sharman in.
Okay.
Who I think has got a fake accent anyway.
Really?
I don't think it's real.
No, it's real.
Well, when did he come out? When did he get off the boat?
We can ask him.
Okay. We'll find out. Could be one of those things. See, I have a very close friend of mine who's of Scottish descent. He's been in Canada for like 40 years, and he still sounds like he's right off the boat. I think it's fake. I think he can talk Canadian if he wants to just fine.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm thinking Sharman's probably doing the same thing. Look, would he have any career at all if he didn't have a British accent?
Yeah, he'd have a really good career.
Excellent question, I think. We'll find out. So it's been a busy time for the Toronto Raptors et al. Just out of interest, they announced today they've traded Steve Novak and a future second-round draft choice to the Utah Jazz.
It just made official today, yeah.
For point guard Deonte Garrett. Which means, by my calculations, the Toronto Raptors now have 14 point guards, which might be difficult to play all at once. And that's going to be an interesting rotation with those 14 guys. Each guy is going to get 3.8 minutes, I believe, of playing time.
Lowry might get a little more.
He might get a little more.
Yeah.
On a per-dollar basis, you'd expect that. Kyle Lowry unveiled today and his deal that everybody knew about. Gravis Vasquez, Patrick Patterson, James Johnson, all those announcements forthcoming. The head coach of the Toronto Raptors is Dwayne Casey, and he joins us from chilly Las Vegas, Nevada. What's the temperature in Vegas?
I tell you what, not as hot as it usually is, Bob.
And well, I was saying.
You're stomping grounds, and you're used to this heat, but it's usually about 102, but it's probably, I would say, high 80s, low 90s right now.
See, there's got to be guys walking around with toques on and fur coats and scarves and stuff. Las Vegans don't like it when it gets down under 90, you know that?
No, I know it. I tell you, it's pretty pleasant right now, and you know, and it's hard to gauge outside because we're in the gym so much while we're here.
I know.
And you're either freezing or burning up when you go outside. But it's become the hotbed for basketball in the summertime.
I want to talk about all of these signings. But before we do that, since we were talking about Vegas, just a quick anecdote about Vegas. We were talking about it earlier, and I said, you know, I think Butch was on with us, Butch Carter. And I said, you know, one of the he's coming down. And I said, you know, one of the problems I have with the summer league is I understand it's a useful thing, and all the guys in the NBA feel like you have to be there and take a look, and you want your guys to go there. And the dilemma that I have with it is it's just too many guys trying to make a name, get noticed, get recognized, and what you see more resembles schoolyard basketball than, you know, organized real basketball. How do you separate the wheat from the chaff when you know guys are out there trying to get noticed?
Well, one thing, Bob, I think that we try to do a good job is to get the guys to buy into the team concept. And I think the more you know, you can drill that and practice that. We try to run our practices just like we normally do during the regular season and try to drill that. And the great thing about it, if you have as many roster players as possible, I'll be daggone if they're going to come out and jack up shots and try to do that. And what you have to do is let the guys who are trying to make it know that, hey, the way you handle yourself on the court now, you know, taking good shots, making good decisions, you know, that's going to give you a better opportunity to make the NBA or make our team. And if you come out jacking up shots and playing out of character, then you have no chance of making the NBA. And usually the guys who are serious about it and the guys who really have a good chance will, you know, buy into that and play that way. And those are normally the guys who get a shot. And the guys who do jack up and don't play within themselves usually are over in Europe or not in any league whatsoever.
Coach, to that point, how significant was buy-in this past season in your mind with guys, not only the Lowry and DeRozans, you obviously want your superstars there, but especially kind of the new complementary parts that came in midseason. How significant to the success of the ball club was that buy-in?
That was huge, Bob. That was something that that really, you know, whatever reason, when we got those guys from Sacramento, Gravis and Chuck and John and Patrick, you know, they bought in immediately. They came in, knew their role, accepted their role, and role acceptance was huge with our team. A lot of times you give guys role and they'll accept it begrudgingly, but those guys came in enthusiastically, accepted their roles, they played their roles, and that was a huge part of how we were successful this year, is guys understanding their job and doing their job with enthusiasm and with no ill intent, with a pure basketball heart, and all that came to mind. Now, the big thing with that now, Bob, is to duplicate that the role acceptance, and that's going to be huge going through the summer, talking to guys about the role, making sure that they understand we don't need 20-point scores at every position. You know, and that was the big thing about bringing James Johnson back is, you know, met with him a few times is, you know, can you accept your role? Can you accept being our defensive stopper? You know, whatever those minutes are, you're our defensive go-to guy. And that's something that younger players can't understand, hard for them to understand, because they're trying to be the next LeBron James or Michael Jordan, and everybody on the team can't do that. And some guys don't have the ability to do it, and sometimes you have to fail and fall down before you recognize who you are.
Is Bruno Caboclo going to play in Vegas?
Yes, he is. And to our fans out there, Bob, he's done an excellent job. He's probably a year away, a couple of years. He's not 2 years from being 2 years away, as some analysts said. You know, but he's probably a year away from mainly being physically ready, getting his body right. He's a typical 18, 19-year-old kid in his body going against, you know, 24, 25-year-old young men. And so once he gets his body in tip-top physical condition, physically strong, because he has a wingspan of 7'7", same as a lot of 7-foot-plus men, his wingspan, he can reach across the lane. So his gift immediately is going to be on the defensive end. He can knock down the corner threes consistently, but all the other things, the mistakes he makes are usually strength-related mistakes on the court.
So where does he play this year?
Well, he's going to be on the roster. He'll be on the roster, and we'll try to find him some minutes, get him some minutes in exhibition season, and probably we'll spend some time down in the D League.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Developing down there and going through the D League process, which will help him get some game experience.
Coach, how big of an off season, of a summer of growth does this have to be for Terrence Ross, and how big of a season will next year be in his growth, and what did you share with him going into his summer that you want to see from him next season as he takes the next step?
The main thing with Terrence is consistency. I think him coming on the court, understanding that, hey, I've got to go all out the minutes I'm out there. I can't float. I can't take possessions off. I can't lose focus.
How do you teach that?
Well, experience. Yeah. You know, experience and fail. I think going through he had a rough playoff experience, as everyone knows. But we stuck with him because we knew that experience was going to help him. And that's all he's been focusing on, is going hard. He's got a different approach to his summer practice, summer workouts. I notice how focused he is on his drills. And he's going at everything at a game speed. And that's going to help him going into next year. And that was our words to him going into the summer. You've got to be totally focused on both ends of the floor, on every possession, because the one possession you take off, this really affects everyone and affects you in more ways than one. So his growth is going to be there. I think DeMar DeRozan's growth is going to be, and then Jonas's growth has to. This is a huge summer for him,
sure,
to get better, and for us to have any success next year. All each one of those players have to come back with something new, something better in the tank.
Everyone's going to get better, Coach. There's only so many minutes to kind of distribute. How do you do that?
Right. Well, the guys will determine that. I really believe the cream rises to the top. I guess that's old school, Bob, and you and I have been around long enough to know that usually players would dictate. I mean, I'm not going to go on contracts. I'm not going to go on anything except what guys do to produce on the floor. And that will establish our rotation. It happened that way last year. Mm-hmm. Guys developed. Guys grew. We didn't go by contracts or anything else. And they made their own way. And usually that happens. And I'm more than convinced that that's the same thing is going to happen this year. There's going to be enough minutes, enough time to go around for our guys. And we'll have a nice, tight rotation as we go into the season. And the guys will dictate that. Those minutes in the rotation.
With Dwayne Casey, the Toronto Raptors head coach, he's in Las Vegas at the Summer League, the NBA Summer League. Mm-hmm. The big news, of course, the signings, specifically Kyle Lowry, who was introduced at a news conference today with his nice big fat contract. Mm-hmm. I recall late last year, maybe it was during the playoffs, maybe it was even in the exit discussions, somebody asked DeMar about Lowry's future, and he kind of sloughed it off. He said something like, he'll be back. Mm-hmm. Did you guys know?
No, it was a time there that, you know, when the Miami started calling and, you know, the LeBron, the big three so-called in Miami started calling, I think they kind of got Kyle's attention. Houston came in and talked to him. The Lakers had interest in him. So his play dictated the fact that he got attention from other teams. But we met with him on the first day of free agency, and, you know, he didn't give us a decision at that time, but he was pretty positive about the city of Toronto, the organization, where we were, the direction we were headed. You know, he knew that we weren't ready to compete for a championship, but he could see the growth and the movement and the goal and the direction and the program that we laid out for him going forward. So at that time, you know, we felt like it. We had a good chance and felt pretty comfortable. But I don't know if it was 100% lock just because of how well he played and the direction he took the team this year.
What do you think was the principal reason why he re-signed with Toronto? I mean, I know you've mentioned a few things here, but did he give you any hints as to there's, like, I love this team. I love the camaraderie. I think we have a chance to win here. I love the city of Toronto. Is there one thing that kind of jumped out at you?
No, you kind of said it. All those things included, the city, the team, the direction, all those are there. And I also do think that Kyle wants to have a legacy in Toronto, that you are part of taking this team in the right direction. If you go to Miami, you're going to be one of the big five or big four. You know, it's not, you know, you'll be a kind of a byline. You get 20 points. But you come here and take this team in the right direction, lead it, be a good citizen, be a positive leader. You can leave a legacy as Vince Carter has before, as some of the other players, some of the great athletes in the city of Toronto has in the past history of the city and the sports market. So I think that was big for Kyle and his outlook for our program and what he brought to the table for this team. And I think that was a big part of it also, was his legacy for our team.
I don't think anybody right now would suggest that Kyle Lowry is the best player ever to play for the Toronto Raptors, and probably not close to that. But that's not really the issue. The interesting thing here is the importance of this signing to the organization, both now and in the foreseeable future. Given a history that has seen Damon Stoudemire want out, Tracy McGrady want out, Vince Carter eventually want out, Chris Bosh leaves. That legacy is reality. It isn't a fabrication. Guys, for probably different reasons, at different times during their careers, decided Toronto wasn't the place they wanted to be. For Kyle Lowry, not necessarily in that class of a player at this point, mm-hmm. historically, but a guy who certainly had several other options to re-sign here. Do you think this sends a message of any sort to other players and one that they will hear?
No question, Bob. I think, you know, all of the names that you mentioned are a big part of the sports for the team's history that left. I don't know what the numbers were, but Kyle's one of the first who had an opportunity, who was a free agent, to leave, to stay. That says something. Again, Kyle's goal is to be an all-star this year, but it does send a message to the team that we are building something the right way in Toronto. Our organization is heading in the right direction, and they see it. They see DeMar making an all-star team. They see Terrence Ross winning the dunk contest and developing to a very exciting player. Jonas Valanciunas is a young and upcoming player. For James Johnson to come back, you know, he had some hard times there, but he had other choices also. For him to come back to our organization sends a good message for us to be able to go out and say, hey, look, we're building something special in Toronto. We have some of the best fans in the NBA, maybe the best fans in the NBA, the way they supported us this year once we won. But again, it's going to be on us to continue it. We have to win. I think that also sends the right message for our organization. And things are going in a positive way. So Kyle re-signing Bob, sent a huge message, but it also is a big piece of the big picture and the direction we're going.
Coach, your message has always been consistency. You wear the same old ball cap at practice all the time. You talk about that at length all the time. Does your message now change going into next season at all, though, that you've taken this first step and the division banner and the first round of the postseason, but now with another year of growth for Valanciunas and Ross and DeRozan and Lowry coming back, that the message changes because just getting to that first step was not good enough moving forward?
Well, I think the message is still going to be consistent basketball-wise, but also, too, you know, we talk about winning. We talk about not being satisfied. Is that a playoff play? Will that win game seven? Will that play win game seven in the playoffs?
Right.
And guys can build from that and gain from that experience. So we'll talk about that more, you know, as far as we have that comparison to go to. From a coaching standpoint, I had been there and won a championship and also been in the championships before in Seattle. But until players actually go through it as they did last year, now you can relate to it. They can relate to it. You can talk about it. So along with the basketball message of how we want to play defensively, how we want to play offensively, those messages now will be included with, is that a game seven play? Will that win game seven for us? If not, you know, let's put it in the trash can. So all those, you know, I'm not smart enough to change as far as the way we teach. I think one thing that has helped us, Bob, is the fact that, hey, our continuity of our program, the building of our program, the building of our defensive philosophy, offensive philosophy, has now kind of risen to the point of winning games. Now we got to build on that to, like you said, to continue to reach, to continue to go farther and not be satisfied.
Oh, I thought you wanted to jump in there again. No. All right, so last thing before we let you go. You've been in Vegas for a couple days. I understand Masai was down earlier this week.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys huddle with James at all?
Yeah, we did. I had dinner with him, met with him twice yesterday. You know, and just talking about, you know, where he is as a person, where he is as a player. You know, we had him as a young player in our organization a couple of years ago. Really was trying to find who he was. And then, you know, he was, you know, felt like he was ahead of the curve a little bit at that time. Now, you know, and after you fall down a little bit, been through a couple of teams, through experience, I thought he did an excellent job in Memphis last year of understanding his role, playing his role. He helped Memphis win a lot of games, get into the playoffs in the East and the West. And so now, and then talking to him, I'm convinced that he understands his role, who he is, what contributions he can bring to our team. And that was really important to us because, as you said earlier, the buy-in was there for our team, the role acceptance was there for our team, and we don't want to bring anything into the locker room that's going to mess that chemistry up and role acceptance up in our locker room. So, yeah, spent a lot of time with James, and we're excited about his addition to our ball club.
Now, I'm interested in James Johnson and your conversations with him, but there was another James that was a last name James, first name LeBron, that was also in Vegas earlier this week. Did you spend an equal amount of time with him?
No, I did not. I ran into his agent, Rich Paul, who I know, and spoke with him the other morning, but didn't get to the point of inviting him to Toronto, which I wanted to, but talked about what was going on. And as a matter of fact, they were staying at this hotel. So it's exciting times, but I was more interested in Terrence Ross running the pick and roll more so than talking to LeBron James. But again, one of these days, Bob, we want to get our franchise in a position where we can talk about recruiting those type players to our ball club. And that's our goal. That's our vision for our team.
Stay out of the sun. And
got to.
And stay in the gym. And stay out of the casino, for God's sakes. Because
You have any tips for the casinos for me?
Yeah, stay out. Just don't go in there at all. I mean, you know, try and find restaurants that are off the strip where you don't even have to walk through the casino. If you need, I'll text you a bunch of them, okay?
Okay, I'll do that, buddy.
Because I can't support you and the rest of the family if you lose all your cake. Have a great time there. We'll see you soon, okay. I hope.
Thank you, buddy. All right, thank you, Bob.
Dwayne Casey, head coach of the Toronto Raptors.
I thought you were going to tell him to put $10 down on Bouchard to win the U.S. Open.
No, I don't want him gambling.
Oh, okay.
And especially, you know, on my advice.
Right.
There's nothing worse than that. Never give somebody a tip when they're in Vegas. And I don't get it as much anymore, but I used to get phone calls when I used to live there all the time. Can you put a bet down for me? Can you put a bet down for me? Can you put a bet down? And I'd always say, no, I can't. I don't want to do that. First of all, it's a pain in the ass. Mm-hmm. And I don't, like, people think you live in Vegas, so therefore you're in a casino every day.
Right.
You know? It's like saying, would you mind going out to the airport and picking up a Philly cheesesteak sandwich for me? Like, well, I don't live near the airport. Anyway. But the other part of it is...
Where do you get a Philly cheesesteak by the airport?
I don't know. I just made that up.
Okay.
The other part of the thing is, there's this thing about... Did you actually make the bet? You know, if they lose the bet, did you pocket the money and not make the bet, or did you actually make the bet for me? And what happens if you say, okay, I'll do my best, and then you don't get there, and that team wins? And what if the guy wanted a 7-team parlay that was going to pay $5,000? He says, great, I just won $5,000. I didn't get to the casino, I'm sorry. The answer to the question is always no. I can't make a bet for you.
So just stay at the casino.
They've been playing soccer for the last little while.
They have.
It's a curious thing. An insanely entertaining game
Tuesday.
2 days ago. Yes. Was it Tuesday? An insanely insipid and boring game yesterday. And the two winners of those two divergent matches will meet in the final. James Sharman joins us in studio to talk about this. More to talk to you than to me.
How the are accent, you? By the way, is fake.
It is fake? Good.
Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, my entire life.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I knew that, and I would do
the
same thing.
The way you said Saskatchewan
was
obvious. Thing.
Got me a wife.
Yeah. The wife, too?
Oh, yeah, she loves the accent.
Does she really?
Oh, yeah.
Is she a Canadian girl?
She is, yeah.
No, she has no accent at all? She hasn't picked it up?
Not at all.
No.
So does that make you a Ryder fan, Sharman?
What's that?
Does that make you a Ryder fan then? As a Moose Jaw?
Yeah. Go Green Machine.
Right.
Right.
Green Machine.
He had to ask.
Spoken as a true
faker.
As a true Moose Jaw guy.
Was there any predictability in the dullness of the Argentinian victory over the Netherlands? And if there was, did it have anything to do with what had happened the day before?
I don't think it did. I mean, obviously, that result in the Brazil game, no one saw that coming. Listen, these two teams have played defensive football before. Argentina, in this World Cup, have relied on good defense, which was a surprise entering. We thought they were very weak at the back, but they changed things around. They relied on organized, good shape, and a few moments of genius from Leo Messi. But generally speaking, they were very, very conservative and pragmatic. The Dutch started off so well. They scored, 10 goals in the group phase?
Right.
And then once the games got interesting, a knockout and must win, that they shut up shop and they scored 2 goals in the knockout phase. So it was predictable that it could be tight and low scoring, but you mentioned the word insipid. That's what it was. No one thought it'd be that bad. It was awful.
I just wondered whether, as, and we were human beings, when you watch something as, and I called it epic, and I think that 7-1 game was an epic game. I think it will, you know, even for non-soccer guys like me, you couldn't not pay attention to that. Mm-hmm. You had to be able to understand how extraordinary that was. We will almost assuredly never see anything like that again in a World Cup. And I wonder whether, as an athlete, you look at that and say, well, I want to win, but I'll tell you what I really don't want to do.
Yeah.
I don't want to be Brazil. I don't want to go out there tomorrow and get my ass handed to me and be embarrassed the way they are right now.
But I think there are so many more ingredients to that 7-1 loss, you know, than just tactics. And Germany, listen, you know, we can, you know, criticize Brazil all we want, but Germany were brilliant on the day and ruthless as well.
Well, at least for about 18 minutes.
Yeah, well, precisely. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, if you're Holland or you're Argentina, you look at the other team and think, man, are they really capable of scoring 7 goals past us? No. You know, now the coaches will obviously deny that had any bearing whatsoever on their game plan. They'll tell you, we had a game plan for this semifinal set up months ago. You know, they thought this would be a matchup in the semifinals. But, you know, maybe in the players' minds there was some nerves there. But overall, I think that result was, you know, irrelevant compared to what we saw yesterday.
Sharma, we saw a troubling incident with the Uruguayans early in the tournament with one of their players getting whacked in the head. The doctor was trying to keep him off the field.
I thought you were going with the bite there.
No, not the bite deal. Right. And we saw it again yesterday with Argentina. Right now in North America, the concussion issue has become a crisis. Sure. Is this something that FIFA needs to address, is going to address?
Well, probably need to, yeah.
Is it even a conversation right now in football circles?
Not so much, no. I mean, it's you hear it here and there, but generally speaking, no. It's very much an old boys club football these days, and they are behind the times in that area. I mean, we see it every week in the Premier League. You see a guy getting his bell rung, gets back up, shake it off, get back
out
there.
It's brutal.
And if you tell most athletes, though, you're in a World Cup semi-final. Like yesterday we saw Mascherano getting his bell
rung. That's the one.
You're in a World Cup semi-final, maybe the only one of your entire career. You know, are you going to stay down or are you going to get back up and get back out there.
The issue to me is it should not be on the player.
Sure. And it should be, I mean, like the quiet room in hockey right now, for example, right? Doesn't exist in soccer. Probably should, yeah. You're right. But they're very backwards in that regard. And FIFA have enough issues in their plate right now, I guess, in their concerns to worry about this.
They must be happy they have a South American team. They like to play with the ball at their feet. Messi's got, 39 successful dribbles, whatever that stat is. And, I mean, the contrasting styles Sunday are... they're polar opposites coming into this final, aren't they?
Well, you think so, yeah. I mean, traditionally speaking, you know, Germany are the pragmatic, efficient, cliche German team. Argentina play the beautiful football. But in this World Cup and in recent years, Argentina's become very defensive. Mm. And they rely on that moment of brilliance by Leo Messi, arguably the best player in the world, whereas Germany have been passing the ball around very well. In this World Cup, though, Germany haven't played that well up until the 7-1 game. And it's funny, it's a funny tournament so far because there hasn't been that one all-encompassing dominant performance outside Germany and Brazil, which was a freak result, let's be honest.
Netherlands looked pretty good against Spain.
Yeah, but that was one great half, though. That game, it's a strange game. That was 45 minutes of Spain looking great, then one moment of brilliance from the Dutch, the Van Persie goal, and then the Spanish fell apart. You know, it's a very strange game. The Dutch, I mean, listen, they were losing to Australia in one match in the second half, 2-1. They almost lost to Mexico. Right. In the last 16, you know, 2 goals in 5 minutes at the end of the game to progress. So it hasn't been one great performance until Germany. So Argentina might be due that. But you're right, different styles. Will they see that moment for Messi? I mean, this is his moment, right? People obviously respect this guy. They say he's one of the great players of all time. But the old argument is, has he got to win that World Cup to be considered the best player of all time? Well, here's your stage, sunshine. Prove it to us.
With Sportsnet's James Sharman.
I like that sunshine.
If the Germans beat Brazil in a shootout 2-1, 1-0, if it is what we expected, you know, a very tight game, completely competitive, does it change your viewpoint on the matchup in the final? Does 7-1 tilt things to Germany inevitably?
No. Well, that's a great question because I don't know what that was from Germany.
Well,
I think it
nobody
was a great
knows
performance,
that, right?
Right? We think it was a great performance, but it was more an awful performance by Brazil.
Right.
7-1 was a freak result. If they had grinded out a 2-1 game against the host nation, you know, and showed great resolve and character, I'd put them as maybe bigger favorites in the final than that.
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you wonder, will there be that emotional letdown? You can't imagine that in a World Cup final, but it's just, it's been a really odd World Cup from the opening kickoff. And that match just personified it. What was it? Was it an all-world, you know, all-time performance or just this result that we'll be talking about for generations?
We talk a lot about matchups in North American, traditional North American sports. Some teams match up better against others. Mm-hmm. And as often as not, more often than not, what we anticipate is a bad matchup for some team becomes a bad matchup. You know, we talked basketball with Dwayne Casey a minute ago. Basketball's a perfect example. There are certain teams that don't match up well against other teams. Does that apply here?
You know, I think in some cases you look at Germany and their weakness is at the back, you know, which you don't often say about Germany. They're very slow in defense. Now, Argentina are hardly a swashbuckling side going forward, but they have Leo Messi, who is a quick player and could really hurt that German defense. So from that standpoint, the matchup might favor Argentina. But from a player-by-player standpoint, Germany is by far the better team in this final, but they haven't got that truly world-class game-breaker that Leo Messi is. There's only one of them, maybe two with Ronaldo. But yeah, matchups in soccer, it's not quite the same as hockey, I don't think, or in the NBA, certainly.
No, I wouldn't think so. But
in this particular occasion, you know, you look at them on paper, well, Germany's a much better team, right? But then you look at that back line for Germany, And their best player at the back, Mats Hummels, has a knee injury. If he's out, it means this player, Per Mertesacker, will go in. A big, huge, 6 foot, 7 foot, typical German defender. Slow as molasses. And you've got to think a Messi would be just salivating.
So when you've got one great player like Messi is, we would all know this, and again, I'm going to try and make comparisons. LeBron is playing. You're going to put your best defender on him, and you're going to do the best job you can to try and shut down LeBron. Sidney Crosby is playing. You're going to have somebody shadow Sidney Crosby. Does that happen?
It does, yeah. You have man marking. It's called man marking for sure. Now,
so this is, since Messi is by far the most dangerous player that Argentina has,
yeah.
Are you prepared as a German side to essentially take greater chance? I guess philosophically say, if somebody else beats us, fine, sure. But we're not going to let Messi beat us.
Yeah, absolutely. We saw in the Dutch game, they put three or four men on Messi,
yeah.
And they did a great job with him. But what that does often is, obviously, by putting two or three guys on one player, it affords other players space. Right
now,
up until this point, though, in this World Cup, Argentina haven't had that great performance by another player. It was going to be Angel Di Maria, who's got an injury right now. Gonzalo Higuain should have stepped up and found that extra space. Hasn't happened so far. But that's what happens. That's why Messi and the Ronaldos are so useful, because even when they're not a factor in the game, they are a factor in the game because they're creating space for someone else. So I think that's going to be fascinating, whether they put man-marking on Messi with a systemized approach, you know, two or three guys on him. We're going to find out. You know, the Germans are very good defensively when they put their mind to it.
What's going to be the fallout in Brazil Monday morning when the tournament's over in reality?
Well, the worst part is if Argentina win it.
Right.
Right. These two hate each other, right. These two nations. They are as big a rival in sport as you'll see. So it's one thing.
So Brazilians are now rooting for the Germans who just wiped them out.
100%.
Yeah.
But I'll say this myth about Brazil, and it's a bit like Canada as well. You know, say Canada loses a big Olympic hockey game. Yeah, we're upset about it. We're down. The hardcores are devastated. But life goes on. The next day you're going to work, you know, you have your family. Same in Brazil. There's this myth that it's a religion and, you know, the world just stops and will crumble. The country will crumble. It won't. You know, people were saying last night in Belo Horizonte after the match, there are Brazilians in the street having a great old time, very drunk, maybe drowning their sorrows, but they're enjoying themselves. Their life goes on, right? It's this self-importance of sport, right? Let's be honest here, right? Oh, well, you know,
Well, are they having a summit, Charmin? Because what we've learned is that if you lose in the Olympics,
we have
to have a summit.
Yeah.
There will be a summit. Sadly, the people that run Brazilian football are a corrupt bunch of old geezers.
You don't
they
say.
Really are, yeah. And the domestic side over there, domestic football is in a mess, has been for a long, long time. There must be change affected there. But
sounds
like
familiar.
I said, the guys who own the clubs, yeah, it does, doesn't it? The guys that run the leagues over there, a lot of self-interest, unfortunately.
Arguably, I don't know this to be true. Were the two best, arguably the two best players, Brazilian players, didn't play?
Yeah. Massive.
One for injury, one because of suspension, right?
Right, yeah.
Is that being used as a an for lack of a better term, an excuse?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's valid. I think, you know, we talked about the character of this team and the pressure they're under. And obviously it was enormous pressure for any sporting realm to play in front of your country at a World Cup. It's enormous. For Brazil, more than others. I think it was a weak team mentally who lose their best two players, including their captain, Silva, the defender, their captain, the best defender by a mile. They lose them. It almost gave the other guys that excuse. You know, throwing two early goals from the Germans, there's the excuse. We can now crumble. You know, we can just let it go. There's no leader out there on the field. And that was, you know, I guess what happened. Because, I mean, that wasn't... Listen, Brazil's not a great, great team in this World Cup. But that performance and that defensive performance was like, it was boys against men.
They looked like they were in quicksand.
They had big eyes, didn't know what was happening, right? Mm-hmm. They had no clue. So,
well, after the first goal, I think, I mean, they just...
They quit. They quit.
I don't know if they quit, but they were... I think they were in shock. And, like, we saw... There were moments there where there were... And you never see this in football. Three or four Germans in the picture and two or three Brazilian defenders, including the goaltender, in the picture.
Yeah.
Like that should be the opposite.
They were giving the ball away. There was mismatches all over the field. You know, it was just
guys weren't getting back.
And Germany were just relentless and ruthless. And give them credit for that, of course. But to see, you know, this Brazil team mentioned, they weren't a great Brazil team. Hasn't been a great Brazil team since 1982, really. It's been another myth of what this team is. But with Silva, you know, controlling that back line, it made a huge difference. When David Luiz, who was the guy who took the captain's armband, is you're now your leader. You know, if you watch football, Arash, I know, Bob, you probably haven't heard David Luiz so much, but he's not a leader. You know, he's a very questionable player in many regards. He's now the guy leading that team. What a dearth of leadership on that team. It's a real problem. And you look at the kids coming through. This could be a long rebuild for Brazilian football. But like I said, it's been a myth for a long time that Brazil have been this Jogo Bonito style of team that just dominate. They've relied on moments of brilliance from some very good players, but generally speaking, since 82, they've been a very European style team, very defensively sound, good foundation, not flash football.
The one thing that's been certain through this World Cup is that nothing is certain.
That's for sure.
That being the case, before we let you go, Argentina or Germany?
No prediction, right? Prediction?
Yeah, I got to do it.
Really?
Well, who do you think?
Well,
I mean, it doesn't have to be in the form.
Listen, I say it just because throughout this time, my predictions have been absolutely dreadful. So,
you're not alone.
Exactly. It's been tough. But listen, in this game, Germany enter as favorites. But there's that Messi factor, and I think it's huge. This is his moment, and in big games, he's performed for his club over the years. He steps it up.
So you got a hunch?
I got a hunch, and my hunch has rarely come off. So don't go to the windows in Vegas.
But.
No, but I think they could pull it off.
Was the signature image of this World Cup the kid with the glasses crying into his Coca-Cola with the Brazilian jersey?
Was a pretty good image, wasn't it? Was a great image, I know. Yeah.
That's how I'll remember.
The children, the real victims of this.
There you go.
Good of you to stop by, even with your fake accent.
I'm so thankful to discuss soccer on Primetime Sports, Bob.
Yeah, well. Don't get used to it now. James Sharman from Sportsnet.
Safe travels back to Moose Jaw.
Yeah.
Thanks, pal.
We'll take the break and come back with more. Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Sitting here chatting up. Didn't realize we were back.
Talking about old times.
Oh, well. Old times, good times, bad times. There's no times like old times.
So Twitter is abuzz.
What is Twitter buzzing about?
LeBron in his Twitter bio has La Familia as part of it. And now Kyrie Irving, who just signed the contract extension with the Cavs today, has La Familia as part of it. And Tristan Thompson of the Cavs has La Familia as part of his bio. So the plot thickens and continues in your home state, Mr. McGowan.
So you're saying then it appears as if it's Ohio.
If it's on Twitter.
It must be true.
the conspiracy theorists.
We don't have a time frame on when he was going to announce. Huh? Some thought there were a significant number of people thought the announcement would come last night.
You know what I really wonder, and this is really taking the conspiracy and this whole mess really far. I wonder if he waits until next week, Major League Baseball All-Star break, when all the attention would be on him.
See,
that's still waiting a lot. That's six more days.
This is pure theory, but I espoused this the other day. I think the backlash from the Miami announcement.
The decision.
Yeah. Was so negative.
Yeah.
That I don't see him doing that again.
He can't.
I think it's going to be a fairly quiet reveal. Now, some have said, there's been a story out there unconfirmed that his website has been ramping up for a deluge of followers or whatever.
Right.
And I guess they're preparing for it. They got to buy more space or bandwidth or whatever. The belief is that that's where he'd do the announcement. I don't know. Maybe it's a sign and trade. I'm not precluding that possibility. If you're Miami and LeBron's leaving, which means Bosch is probably leaving, don't you want to get something back? The problem is, who dat?
Yeah.
Who the guy you want to get back?
And what have you developed? That was the point Butch Carter was making earlier. Norris Cole, who and what have you been? Mario Chalmers disappeared in the NBA Finals.
Oh, you're talking about Miami guys.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. What? I mean, they go from penthouse to outhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, outhouse.
Sure.
Like, they could be the worst team in the East, well, and that's saying something.
But that's what the Cavs became. The Cavs went from a team that was in the Eastern Conference Final.
Essentially, you're right. Yeah.
And then what?
Yeah. I think it'd be far more devastating for Miami, though.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
They've had 3 years kind of at the top of the food chain. All the attention, two championships, you know, a lot of stuff there. It's going to be hard for them to.
Miami's won three world championships in the last 8 years. They'll be okay.
Well, I'm sure they'll be fine. But they have among the highest ticket prices in the league because of that group.
Not anymore.
I think every single game that LeBron's played at home has been a sellout.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that gravy chain it looks like it's about to come to an end.
It's just amazing.
I just think a sign and trade, even though Cleveland doesn't have much to give them, yeah, I think you almost got to try and get something back, don't you? Don't you?
You've been on the air now 25 years. Do you ever?
Well, 40, but 25 straight here, doing this. 26, actually, next
26.
Week.
26. Do you ever remember the Los Angeles Lakers being this irrelevant in the conversation?
No. No.
It's amazing what's going on there and how they're not more of a player in all of this. With Melo, with Kevin Love, with LeBron.
Yeah, but you know what it is? They let it slip away.
Well, the old man died.
They went from...
Once Dr. Jerry Buss passed, the two kids took over and look what's happened.
I can't dispute that there's probably something to that, but the Lakers were always at some stage of being there or almost being back there.
Sure.
You know, the stock market ticker would look kind of like a wave. It never went very far down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now all of a sudden it's just gone. It's like BlackBerry. Now how do you bring that back?
Right.
And I don't care where you are. You've got a bad team, especially in the NBA. Nobody wants to go.
Is LeBron going to Cleveland?
It sounds like it, but what the hell do I know?
I hear you.
Nice to see you. Thanks for stopping by. That's Arash Madani. He'll be going back to Wimbledon next year again, too, by the way. See you tomorrow. Good night.